Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our weekly conversations include you. Here's our number. You might want to write it down in case you'd like to join us anytime during the program. It's 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you call us from the neighbor islands or if you're listening to the live stream. One of the more controversial bills of the 2014 legislative session was the bill to fund Kuponicare. It wasn't that the bill lacked support. On the contrary, there was great support for it. But what became an issue as the session moved to a close was what pool of money could fund the services for Medicaid-eligible seniors needing long-term care. The part of the bill that divided the community of service providers and senior advocates was a section that said, quote, "The Kuponicare program was created to provide key services and support for all older persons in the state without regard to Medicaid eligibility or receipt and without regard to eligibility for supportive and nutrition services under Title III of the Federal Older Americans Act." Senate Bill 2346 passed and went to the governor. Tonight, we'll look at what changes can be expected as the shift in policy takes effect and what the organizations who deeply care about seniors and who were deeply divided, how they choose to go forward. My panel tonight includes Wes Lum, the director of the Executive Office on Aging, Representative Della Al-Baladi, AARP Hawaii State Director Barbara Kim Stanton, and Howard Garvel, President and CEO of Child and Family Service. And of course, you're here too. Again, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Thank you all for being here.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good
Wes,
to be here.
I want to start with you. The irony of all this is that everybody cares about seniors getting the services they really need. And there was no division over funding this as fully as possible. It was when the bill changed and that Medicaid issue came up that there started to be this split. At what point do you think that this can be brought back to the issue of simply dealing with seniors, or is this going to haunt us as we move forward as the bill takes effect?
You know, I think that, as we move forward, the legislature has, in its collective wisdom, has made this change to the Kuponicare policy. The policy, the way that we had interpreted it, was that we wanted to target, these Kuponicare dollars to serve people, older adults, who did not have access to any other home and community-based service program.
In other words, no other place where they could turn.
Correct. So if you had Medicaid or veterans benefits or a private long-term care insurance policy, it was our policy to not fund, to not use services using Kuponicare dollars to fund those services that may not have been provided by those other programs, because we wanted to target those to the gap group, which we defined as people who didn't have access to anything else. But since the legislature has changed the policy, we are going to be moving forward and making changes administratively and working with our county offices on aging as well as Medicaid to effectuate these changes.
I want to get you into this conversation, Representative Della Al-Baladi, that we're really looking at tweaks that have to happen on the Medicaid side, too. This is not a unilateral situation only with those services delivered under Kuponicare.
I think we're seeing a lot of changes in Medicaid right now. Two main drivers. First of all, Medicaid has integrated all of the kind of sets of people that they service. And so that's causing us to have to revisit the issue of Kuponicare Medicaid. The other thing that's happening in Medicaid is because of the Medicaid expansion through the Affordable Care Act, we are seeing a whole new flood of people in Medicaid. We don't know where those people are, because that can range from children to age, 90, 100, right? So what we have to really understand is what's happening in the Medicaid population. We have to understand the needs of all the kupuna that can benefit from kupuna care, and then we need to move accordingly.
But you're really saying knowing who's in which group?
That's a critical.
Because in some cases, it's a bit of conjecture to say there's going to be this huge swath of people who are going to be moving over into needing, Kuponicare dollars coming into to Medicaid. If, in fact, you don't know who is really in the Medicaid population, who are the kids? Who are the seniors?
And we also have to tease out, and I think this is one of the fundamental misunderstandings that became clear to folks here in the legislature, is that not all Medicaid-eligible kupuna can get home care-based services. So we have a lot of Medicaid kupuna who cannot get some of these services that Kupuna Care provides because it's not medically necessary. And that's the way Medicaid controls cost on their end. So we really need to look at basically, I think, both programs and look at what funds are available and then look at the most frail and vulnerable in our communities who can benefit from this. And I think what we're going to find is that there is not, in fact, this whole flood of Medicaid Kupuna who are using the resources that we, you know, when I look back on how much we actually did fund over the biennium for all of the kind of elderly services, we put over $15 million on the table. So I think there's a commitment there. Now we need to kind of take a pause, go back and look at where the funding sources are in Medicaid and state funds, and then move accordingly.
I want to get the two of you in this conversation too, Howard and Barbara. Looking at service providing on one side of it and also, you know, the funds to do it on the other, how do you start to take this apart and figure out what services need to come from what pool of money? For a lot of people, that's very, very confusing. They're looking for any help from any pot, from anywhere. And the idea that there might be some potential redundancy never even enters into their mind.
Well, you know, I really think that that while we were pleased about the appropriation, we think that this bill set bad policy, because what it does is it's a sea change. Because what when you look at what you're trying to do, basic state policy is the principle of other people's money, that if you can tap into federal funds, if you can stretch, if you can keep the state monies so that you have more monies to stretch to take care of services that you can't get in any other way. The state covers those things. That's what you do. And so that's why we think that what really should have been done on this one is that those who qualified and were eligible for the Medicaid in-home services, what we call home and community-based services, should be getting the monies from that pot. Those who could qualify for veterans should the veterans program should get from that pot. And then those who don't qualify for any program, there was before, there was in, under the old purpose, there was Kupuna Care. And if you're, you know, you, there's a lot of people who are very poor and they're above the Medicaid level. All you need to have is $1,119 a month. And if you have a dollar more, you're above the limit. And Kupuna Care was the only program for those, for to help those seniors at home who didn't qualify for anything. And that's why when that happened, when that program went away, we were really dismayed. We still are, quite frankly.
Well, as we talked about at the beginning, the split in the community is deep, and trying to move forward with it is what you're all about the business of doing now. But Howard, as you know, we talk about some of these issues. If what Barbara's saying is, if this one could only be tapped in with that pool of money, this one goes to this one, this one goes to that one. But that also would say that, that there would be a great necessity for having a great deal of coordination and a whole lot of organization to be able to do that. And for some people, particularly seniors, again, not caring where it's coming from as long as that help is there. But that puts a lot of burden on the flip side, which would be some of the services you provide.
Yes, and I think what we're talking about here is not Medicaid across the board. We're talking about a specific, rather contained group of Kupuna who are on Medicaid, but for whom Medicaid does not cover the services they may need. And our view is that those services, like senior case management or non-medical transportation, those services should be covered under Kupuna Care dollars. Otherwise, as providers, we're faced with a situation where are we talking about not providing the services at all, and we know that they're not going to get them under Medicaid? That just doesn't seem right. And so that is really what we're talking about here. And I don't think anyone disagrees that if a senior can get services from Medicaid that Medicaid will cover, they should definitely get services there. The state draws down a 50-50 match, so financially it makes good sense. but it also is fair, and it makes sense that they get those services there. Now, that's not so easy because for a lot of seniors, navigating the Medicaid system and working through and getting help from Medicaid isn't always easy. And understanding for certain seniors between any issues around hearing or any possible dementia becomes a challenge. And so they may need some extra support to navigate the Medicaid system. So it's not necessarily as simple as, will Medicaid cover the service they need, or can we ensure that they get connected to that service that, by all means, Medicaid should provide it if they do cover that service. So we're talking about a group of services, small group of services, and a small group that we know of Kupuna, who cannot get services covered by Medicaid and need those services.
Wes, go ahead.
So I think, you know, Howard is correct. We don't want to see anyone fall through the cracks. And, you know, I think, you know, what sparked all of this, and I do thank the service providers for bringing this up to our attention, was the fact that because of rules between Medicaid and Kupuna Care and our Title III funds, there were gap services. There are services that fell into this that people were not receiving because they did not. It was not medically necessary under Medicaid. But, you know, I think now because of changes that we have made and the fact that Title III policies, the way in which we administer Title III dollars, which are federal dollars, is that we can tap into the Title III funds to provide Kupuna Care-like services to cover Medicaid individuals who are denied a service by the health plan, or two, service is not provided by the health plan because it's not medically necessary, like Howard said, case management or non-medical transportation. So we already have Title III in place to be able to fill that gap. And that's why we thought that, you know, let's preserve Kupuna Care for those who have no other option.
We've got callers already stacking. Barbara?
I just want to say one thing, that I understand what Howard said about the intent. We were just trying to look at services not covered by Medicaid. But unfortunately, the legislation says without regard to Medicaid eligibility. So in just talking to the county aging agencies, I have to be careful not to use the acronym, the AAAs, but it's the equivalent, the county aging agencies. They have already said that within the 2 weeks of the legislature closing, they are getting calls. They have people from Medicaid deciding that they want to be on Kupuna Care, even though they're now in the Medicaid program to get their meals. They decided they'd rather be in the Kupuna Care program.
Why?
Because the Kupuna Care program has additional services like non-medical transportation, and the criteria is not as high. And so for various reasons, even the Medicaid people said, yes, it's easier to get into Kupuna Care. They have more services. And so what you see is the water going down to the lower services. So this week, they said they had people from the VA. They had people from insurance companies recommending. And they also had people from Medicaid saying they wanted to move over. And to have that kind of interest without, and we were all very surprised because we thought there is no way they would have heard about this soon, but they already know, and they were
following it too.
So I think a possible way forward, Beth, on this, and this is something that we had thrown out there, but the advocates didn't want to do this during the legislative session. So this is certainly something we can come back to, but we need to make Kupuna Care the payer of last resort. We need to revisit the Kupuna Care statute. And I hope Barbara can agree with me, since she has said that now she's heard anecdotally that this is happening. I think for the next legislative session, we need to have the counties come in. I hope that they're going to be keeping the data so that we know. And then we can also tap into the data from the veterans. I think we want to ensure that Kupuna Care is available for all, but we need the data. And what we need to do then is in the statute. And I hope we don't see resistance to this, but we have to make it clear that Kupuna Care should be the payer of last resort after Medicaid, after VA, after Title III, after all of these other sources of funding that we can identify.
If I might just add one more thing. When you have the last resort, you know who really gets displaced are those who are poor who don't qualify for Medicaid. Because the three groups we're talking about who are looking at moving over into the Kupuna Care program are those who already are in the Medicaid in-home services program. That's one group. Those who want additional supplemental services that they're not currently getting. And a third group are those on the wait list for Medicaid. And so you have those groups and the veteran groups coming in, migrating into the Kupuna Care program, where you have the non-Medicaid people. And so what happens is they go to the back of the line. So they will never get service if, you know.
But
I
think the way
this.
Forward is really making decisions based on some real data. And we don't have it. That's the challenge. And I think once we can get more data, then some of this can drive appropriate decision making. For 15 years on Oahu, whether it was appropriate or not, the providers were basically told that they could serve Kupuna who were on Medicaid. And not so much Kupuna who could get services covered by Medicaid, but Kupuna who could not. And that actually was in the contracts, and it was allowed. So we've been doing it a particular way for 15 years. The neighbor island counties have done it the opposite way in terms of serving, excluding Medicaid. So we don't even have good data about how many people we're talking about here, because many of the providers were not even asking about Medicaid. They weren't even expected to. So there's a real lack of the data that we would need to really be sure
right,
that we
goes
can
back
come
to,
up with the
to
right.
What I asked you before about don't we really need to have some real linear organization to be able to see what part is coming from what and really who needs what. Yeah. We have no lack of callers at the moment. We're going to start taking some calls. First going to Maxine, who's calling us from Lanikila. Good morning. Or good afternoon. Sorry.
Hi.
Welcome to Town Square.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead.
Yes. No, I'm just listening to your voices. I have no questions to ask right now.
Okay. All right. Then our apologies that you got put through. Going now to Michael calling us from the Big Island.
Beth Ann, this is Michael from the Big Island. And what about us seniors not on Medicaid? There are a lot of people like me not on Medicaid that are struggling to make ends meet. Why is Kupuna Care being turned into a Medicaid program when Medicaid already has so much more funds than Kupuna Care? Mr. Lum and the lady from Barbara are correct. The legislators made a big mistake here. You don't know that this is just a small group. They're assuming that, and I'm sure the gentleman Howard that said that it's just a small group is making an assumption or just guessing.
All right, Michael, thanks very much for calling. But, you know, Howard, your point and mine, too, was the fact that we don't have some real data on this. Wouldn't that be a place to start?
Yeah, and the only data we do have suggests on Oahu, which has a much higher population than any other island, that even there the numbers are relatively small of the data that we do have. So we're not even – we don't necessarily know that this is a significant increase that we're talking about. We just don't know.
All right. Wes, jump in here.
Yeah. So actually, you know, we've already started having conversations with our county offices, with our Medicaid office, as well as our information technology provider, because we do need to start collecting this information. And so we are right now trying to figure out exactly what we need to collect, how we need to get this into our IT system so that we can, when it comes time for the next legislative session, to have this information so we can make good decisions. So it's not just based on anecdotal stories.
It seems like you are more in agreement than not, at least on some of these points. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us. 941-3689 is our number if you're on Oahu, or 877-941-3689. What pool of money takes care of those who may be Medicaid eligible as it stands now with the bill that was recently passed? It could be any of those pools of money to be able to offer the services. Howard Garville from Child and Family Services, we've been doing it that way for 15 years and really don't really have any other needs to change. But yet there are those who say, you know, the money is getting thin and we should be very concerned about which pool is going to provide what services and at what cost. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to Sophie, calling us from the downtown area. Aloha, yes. Sophie.
Yes, this is Sophie.
Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome to Town Square.
The question, this, I have a question to address to Representative Bilotti. And the way I understand is that Kapuna Care has a fixed base, pretty much fixed since 2002. And there hasn't really been an increase in the funding scenario or profile. And the aging population has been, you know, basically increasing. And those of us who can really do not qualify for Medicaid, right on the borderline of Medicare, are truly in need of this funding. And this is a very small pool of resource that seniors who are non-Medicaid, who really need the support, is really truly relying on this Kapuna Care. It is really in a sort of like a major hurdle, monumental hurdle to get additional support. And more people are not eligible for Medicaid, and yet this funding scenario remains fixed. So the people who are in the non-Medicaid scenario is getting squeezed tight.
All right, Sophie, let me give her a chance to give you an answer.
So I'm actually going to maybe defer to Wes on this, but my understanding is that we've put $4.8 million in the base budget, which is actually a new development. And then on top of that, over the biennium, we've added additional $3.6 million last year and $4.2 million this year. So I think what we have to look at is the fact that we are trying to make this a priority and we're putting real money on the table for these services. This issue, again, about Kapuna Care being the payer of last resort, we certainly need to revisit that. And understanding that the aging population is growing, we want to ensure that people can age in place, whether they're Medicaid and non-Medicaid, because we know once they are institutionalized, that's when the prices and the costs skyrocket. And when a Medicaid individual goes into nursing facilities, then that increases the cost, obviously, to both the federal government and to the state. So, again, my point is, one, we've grown the budget, the base budget, and two, we do need to revisit these issues.
But Sophie also seems to be making the point that you and Barbara were making, that at that crucial area where they're not Medicaid qualified, that they're caught really being squeezed because they can't get into this program and they need Kapuna Care, but the fear is that they're not going to be enough dollars to be able to service everybody.
Yeah. Well, can I just make a quick comment?
Please.
Just to kind of clarify the budget. Our budget. So the Executive Office on Aging has had a base budget of approximately $4.8 million since about 2004, 2002, 2004, something like that. And we have, the legislature has been tremendous in terms of adding additional appropriations, but those are one-time appropriations. And we've always been having to come back year after year to ask that it be increased. And actually, ideally, we'd like to have our base budget increased to $9 million minimally. So that I just wanted to clarify that.
I think that the concern, was it Sophie?
Sophie
was saying, is a really real one. Because when you look at the number of seniors who are 60 and older, there's over 277,000 seniors in Hawaii. And when you look at the number of seniors on Medicaid, that's 40,000. And the seniors on Medicaid, they have access to different programs. And that's so what you have is the only program, Kapuna Care, which is $9 million, versus Medicaid, which gets something like $650 million. This Kapuna Care program statewide only services about, Wes, I believe it's 5,000 people?
Correct.
5,000 people. 5,000 people, seniors, out of 277,000. And so when I talk about public policy, the need to say what you want to do is you want to keep as many seniors at home without falling into Medicaid, because the more seniors that fall into Medicaid means it's going to be a greater cost for the state. Medicaid is a much more expensive option than trying to just keep people as independent as possible.
Any idea in that 200 and some odd thousand that you mentioned of how many are in that margin place that Sophie finds herself in now?
What we see is the demographics, because, you know, what we see is when we're looking at the need for long-term care services, you have the top 2%, and they're so rich, we never worry about them. They'll always be okay. And then we have the middle class, the middle income group, and then we have the Medicaid group, those who make less than $1,119 a month or have income of that amount. And what we see is that the Medicaid group is growing, and you see the middle income group reconfiguring. So it's like sand going down, and you have a greater number of seniors who are at the lower end of the middle group than ever before.
All right. Yeah. Let's take some more callers. Or Wes, you want to jump in here very quickly?
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that, give us a few years, and with the development of the Aging and Disability Resource Centers, the questions that we ask and the data that we collect will actually be able to answer your question about how many people are actually near Medicaid eligibility, but also understanding their level of need and their functional capacity.
What I can tell you is that Kupuna Care providers on Oahu have not had to turn away anyone who is low income and not on Medicaid. They've all been served if they meet the eligibility criteria. Not one person has been turned away. It's only recently that we were asked to turn away Medicaid folks who couldn't get services from Medicaid, which probably helped to stimulate this whole issue. But there's not been a Kupuna who is low income and not on Medicaid.
Who's gone wanting. Okay, all right.
For the Medicaid people.
Let's take some more callers. Yes, we've got Tony calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Tony. Thank you for your patience.
Hi. I'd like to pick up on a point that Barbara made about people who are now finding this new resource and trying to get services through the Kupuna Care program. And I'm wondering particularly how much money the state is going to have to appropriate next year if the Kupuna Care program transforms in the way that we've been talking about, and particularly if the counties, which have been spending millions of their own dollars, decide that they're now going to turn to Kupuna Care instead of using county funds.
All right, Tony, thanks very much for your question and for waiting to ask it. That seems to be, in part, a question for you, Della Albalotti. No, I think we just lost Tony.
If you could rephrase the question.
You wanted to ask him a little bit?
I think I heard the question, which is how much more money will we need, basically? What happens when the legislature comes back next time
and has to reevaluate this
and
really look at that differential of monies and try to reappropriate it in a way that will fund it as Kupuna Care is transforming.
Yeah, because right now when the state funds Kupuna Care, what the counties have been doing is they have been appropriating monies to take care of the Medicaid individuals, and so Kauai, for instance, just mentioned in a group meeting that they had $81,000 for the Medicaid individuals to have meals. But looking at the trends, they said next year they're going to need about $150,000. And so the question from councilman was, why is it that if this program is now state funded, why does the county have to pick it up? Because previously the county picked it up because Kupuna Care didn't. And so what we can see is the county's looking at now that the state Kupuna Care is going to take care of Medicaid meals. Shouldn't that be the drawdown? And that is a cost shifting that I think is in debate right now. I mean, I can see why that question is being asked.
I would, in fact, flip the question and ask, why hasn't the city and county of Honolulu, like the other counties, put in some monies for the Kupuna Care services? The other thing that I would add in response to that is that there's some misinformation, I think, that's being put out there. You know, we are talking about Medicaid individuals who don't qualify for these services because they're not medically necessary services. So what AARP is suggesting is that we should turn those folks away from providing them meals, non-medical transportation, and then that's going to drive those individuals closer and closer, we know, to maybe being institutionalized, which is going to be even more costly in the future. So I think, you know, I think these are great conversations we have to have. We have to look at increasing the fiscal support for all of these programs, but we have to do it in a way that's going to, I believe, looking back at the 1999 guidelines for Kupuna Care, and I'd like to clarify this. You know, the guidelines never said that this is only going to be for non-Medicaid elderly. The focus of Kupuna Care from the very beginning was how do we keep individuals aging in place in their homes, whether or not they were Medicaid or not. And so I wanted to go back, and I think the legislature did that. So this concept that we've somehow shifted and changed Kupuna Care, I take really great offense to that. That's not true.
Can I just
correct? And I think the other thing I just want to reinforce about that is that we're talking part of the disconnect here is that Medicaid is a health services. Medicaid funds services that are health-related.
Not necessarily home-based services.
Right. The home and community-based services that Child and Family Service provides, that Lanakila Pacific provides, like meals, like Catholic Charities provides, you know, non-medical transportation, and other services that are provided. Those services are social services, and they don't fit a medical model. So the problem is that you say, well, Medicaid folks should go to Medicaid. Well, if they can get services under Medicaid that are payable by Medicaid, that's fine. But the problem is a lot of the services we provide are really designed to try to help our kupuna stay in the community without those health services. So by providing some of the social services, we prevent that from happening. So I think Rep. Bilotti is very correct in saying that those social services are important too, to really prevent institutionalization, to keep our kupuna in the community, which really was the original intent, as I understand it, of Kupuna Care funding.
Yeah. So, and all of this seems to suggest, Howard, that there needs to be some more integrated analysis of who you're really talking about right now, who needs what services. That's going to be a heck of a job to undertake.
I just want to correct that AARP's position has never been to We have always wanted people to receive services. We do not want to see people turned away. So I just want to correct that for the record. But what I'm saying is that from AARP's point of view, that sometimes what you have is some Medicaid people who are getting basic services, maybe not maybe transportation to the doctor, but not transportation to the grocery store. Because that non-medical transportation is Kupuna Care only. And what we see is that there are individuals who don't have a single service. And that's why we're saying that while we're looking at Medicaid people getting supplemental services under Kupuna Care, what about the rest of the seniors hovering above the Medicaid line who don't even have a single service? Those are the ones that we can see are totally shut out. You want to talk about a gap group, that is a gap group.
And this is where I think we have to join hands and say to our legislators, let's put more money towards these programs if that's truly something that we're committed to.
That's exactly what Wes just said a moment ago, that the baseline needs to come up.
That's right.
All right, let's take a few more callers. They've been waiting patiently. Let's go to May calling us from Waipio. Aloha, May. Welcome to Town Square.
Well, I know that the amount of money is limited, but people like me who don't even think about Medicaid because we know we don't qualify, but we're not rich, and there are services that we need, and we were not aware of Kupuna Care. I think that we should have or why isn't the state doing a better job of letting families know about the program? Maybe that's why you don't have as many people participating.
Wes, you know, part of the public outreach is also falling under your purview going forward. Do we really not have enough understanding about what programs do what or should do what?
Well, I think we need to have a better awareness.
That's the point. I mean, if some people don't understand what programs are available and what they do, then, you know, I'm asking Wes if that's something that we need to have more of a directed campaign to be able to allow people to understand what does what and who would be eligible for what.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'd agree that we can do a better job of promotion and outreach for Kupuna Care and all services. That people have access to, and we have to do this in partnership with our county offices on aging, because the state administers the funds, but the county offices on aging are actually the ones who know their communities the best. We give the monies to them. They're the ones who prioritize how the funds are going to be used. And we have to work closely with them to ensure that there is a wide distribution of people knowing that these services are available to
because
tap
we
into.
What we hear on the flip side of it, on the outside, is that people will call and say, I don't know how to do. Where do I go for them? I mean, even calling us here at Public Radio because they're not really sure how they go about it, or they feel that they're going to get lost in a system.
Beth Ann, that's I'll make a little plug here. That's one of the reasons that Senior Case Management, which is a program, it happens to be a program Child and Family Service provides, but I'm not just touting it because it's Child and Family Service. That's why a program like that is so important, because we have gerontology experts who know the services and know how to help the family, because it's often a caregiver who's calling us, not necessarily the kupuna. And we know about the services in our own community, and we help that family get connected to the right services. And I went through that with my mother when she was beginning to develop dementia. And I'm a social worker, but I had no idea how to navigate the system. So that is a critical need for all families, and it is a very difficult thing to figure out. What do I do? Who do I go to for this? What are my rights? What are my options? While you're trying to do the best you can, especially as a caregiver, do the best you can for a loving parent, an aging parent who may be starting to fail a little bit. So I think it's a critical service. It's not a medical service. It's a social service, but it plays an absolutely critical role in the whole service delivery system.
The integration of all of these services and being able to make it as easy as possible for people who are in that kind of a bind and may not even have your background in social work, as little as that helped you dealing with your mother.
Yeah.
Think about other people, too. That's the point you're saying, that people need to have something that they can use as a guideline. We've got lots of callers on the line. If you want to join the conversation, do it sooner rather than later. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to Carla calling us from Kona. Aloha, Carla. Thank you for your patience.
Good afternoon. I have a couple of questions. One of which is, why is it that insurance companies can deny services when a doctor repeatedly prescribes a medication that keeps a person in their home? How is it that they're able to go around the doctor when the doctor repeatedly, not just one, but three or four doctors, prescribe a medication that will keep a person in their home? Why is it they are able to decide what is medically needed as opposed to the doctor? And number two, the other question is of course it's less expensive for people to be in their own homes and to have services provided in their homes to keep them out of institutions. And how the insurance companies are pulling strings here. I don't understand why insurance companies are involved in health care. I don't understand it.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there, Carla, because that's a big loaded question. We could do a whole hour just on that. And we've had doctors call in and say ostensibly the same thing as you're saying now. The de facto thing is, at the moment, they have to approve some of those services. But what happens when we're talking about a senior and for certain medications? There are still rules and regulations about what happens. I mean, you're nodding your head there, Barbara. I mean, in terms of a senior who has to have certain medications. And we've talked about how sometimes seniors have made choices between medications and eating.
They split pills. They choose. They have to decide between a meal and a pill, and we know that. And we also know that, getting back to the issue of Kupuna Care and trying to keep people at home as long as possible, one of the reasons we support this, AARP supports that aging at home because we know, number one, the senior wants to be at home as long as possible. But, you know, from a fiscal point of view, until you need 24/7 care, you can the cost of having somebody in institution is three times higher than the cost for caring at home. And this is why it is just good fiscal policy to try and keep people at home. And quite frankly, if we had people going into institutions, we don't have enough beds. We don't have enough institutions. And so it just makes sense to keep people at home in their communities where they want to be, where it's financially more practical, and where we don't have the infrastructure in the nursing institutions anyway.
And so not everybody's going to need 24/7 care at some point either.
That's right. And you know, it's amazing how long you can stay at home if even with needing serious medical care. It's amazing how long you can stay at home.
All right. We're going to go on to some other callers who want to talk to all of you, too. Going to June, calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, June. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. Yes, I'm a caregiver. And, you know, I'm getting really confused because then I hear that, you know, only Medicaid clients are getting some Kupuna Care, but my mother has been receiving Kupuna Care, and it's been excellent. So I think that the information sounds very skewed. But I have two questions, too. Is there any data showing that non-Medicaid seniors are not able to receive Kupuna Care services? And then also, what kind of in-home services do veterans receive that are similar to Kupuna Care services? You know, they keep on talking about veteran services and, you know, that people cannot get the Kupuna services, but, you know, I can attest that my mom is getting Kupuna services and she's not Medicaid. So what's going on here?
Wait, I'm
okay,
sorry.
Your mom
is on Medicaid.
Is on Medicaid, correct?
No, not on Medicaid.
Or not on Medicaid.
Okay, that's what everybody was unsure about. So your mother's not on Medicaid, and she's getting.
And she has been receiving Kupuna services. So, and then I hear that you're not supposed to be only Medicaid people.
No. I think you misinterpreted what's being said.
What we're saying is that there were seniors on Medicaid who could not get Medicaid-covered services. And the passage of Senate Bill 2346 does now allow for seniors who are on Medicaid but can't get those Medicaid-covered services, such as senior case management, such as non-medical transportation, can be served with state Kupuna Care funds. That's what we're saying. It doesn't change that low-income seniors who are not on Medicaid, they will continue to be able to get Kupuna Care services with Kupuna Care state funds. And like I said earlier, on Oahu, there is not one person that I'm aware of that any provider has ever turned away who is low-income, does not qualify for Medicaid, and does qualify for Kupuna Care services. They've been provided services.
All right, June. Thanks for the question. Hope it's clear now. Going to Kealoha, calling us from Chinatown. Aloha, Kealoha. Thank you for being here.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. My concern is that with respect to Medicaid, it just seems that oftentimes we find that there's not sufficient funding for the Medicare, and then there's always this big push to find funds because that's a mandated program. What are the safeguards, and this is directed to the representative because she keeps saying that, you know, we need to be pushing for more funding for extra Kupuna Care next time, and that, you know, why aren't the counties, you know, like, for example, the county of Honolulu putting in more funding? So, you know, since we're talking about funds, they're always nice to have programs, and Kupuna Care was one of those, you know, nice to have, and certainly I support all of this, is what are the safeguards that this funding isn't, you know, for this small group of people of in Kapuna Care, which is not Medicaid, you know, qualified at this point, that this group isn't going to be lost and that they are not going to be appropriately taken care of, and that the funding isn't going to be used for Medicaid required funds in the future, even in this year, because...
So you're talking about... Hang on, I'm going to stop you right there. You're talking about so that they wouldn't be in any way commingled, or that the services for Kapuna Care would be delivered for those who need them. Okay, let her answer you.
So I think this is where we have to come in next year and make sure that if that's the policy, and I believe that is the policy that people want to see, is that Kapuna Care becomes the payer of last resort. I also think that we need to ensure that we're working to build up a strong aging disability resource center that can manage all of this, and that we know that there's not going to be duplication of services, or there's not going to be individuals either gaming the system somehow, and that if they belong in the Medicaid system and they qualify for those medically necessary services, they're drawing down on those services.
Because that's what she's afraid of.
Yes. And so that's where the safeguards are. It's in making sure that Kapuna Care is the payer of last resort.
All right, Wes, jump into this.
Adding to what Della is talking about, the development of the Aging and Disability Resource Centers and our County Office on Aging, being able to authorize the services, to be able to make that check with Medicaid to ensure that there are no duplication. Because the worst thing that we could do is to use, say, Title III funds to serve to provide a service that is being provided by Medicaid, because that puts us at risk of
not having the money to do what it needs to do.
Yeah, but also violating Medicaid federal dollars, because we're using the same federal dollars to provide two same services. So we need that checks and balance system, and it's the County Office on Aging and Disability Resource Centers that are actually going to have that responsibility to have those safeguards in place.
And that goes back to the whole issue that we've been threading through this entire conversation about having integrated analysis and really knowing what's happening and having the data so that you can make those decisions.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think a lot of concern and questions still remain about the Aging Disability Resource Centers, which conceptually are wonderful as an idea, as a one-stop shop, essentially. And they are a federal requirement, so it's going to happen. So how do we ensure, and this is what I think some of the, hopefully, the focus is going to be among seniors, both seniors themselves, providers, Executive Office on Aging, the Elderly Affairs Division, City, County of Honolulu, AARP, and others. How do we ensure that we build the best ADRC possible on Oahu within the financial resources that are available, so that we have a very good coordinated, integrated system of services? We can track Medicaid and make sure that people who are covered under Medicaid, get services under Medicaid and not under Kapuna Care or Title III, and we get the data that we really need to make better decisions going forward.
Okay. Barbara, very quickly, because I want to take some more callers before we have to say
goodbye. I think one of the questions that concerns I heard on the last caller, Kea Aloha, I think, I think what I heard was a worry that people who are not on Medicaid might be displaced in the Kapuna Care program by people who are on Medicaid. Because when Representative Bilotti is talking about Kapuna Care being the peer of last resort, you can still have somebody on the Medicaid wait list who goes over to Kapuna Care, and they might be competing for the same services by somebody who is not on Medicaid. And so
I'd like to challenge you. If the person is on Medicaid wait list, are you saying they shouldn't get the services?
No, I'm not. I'm saying that if the person is on Medicaid wait list and they're not getting any services, so they apply for services at Kapuna Care, then would they have priority over somebody who is not Medicaid eligible? And I think that how you would prioritize that might be the question. Because there is that concern about Medicaid people are displacing the non-Medicaid people in Kapuna Care. That's one of the questions that came up for discussion.
But a Medicaid waitlisted person is a non-Medicaid person. So that person is that gap group, Barbara, that you want to ensure is receiving services. And I think that concern is very real. We want to make sure that there's money there for all of our kapuna. We have to go and, I think, look at how do we increase the pot of money? How do we make sure that the money that we can get from other federal pots and sources, we get that money. But we need to look at, I think, this integrated ADRC to address all the needs of the kapuna in our community.
All right. I do hear you, and but I think this might be another conversation. But no, this person
well,
might
as
be
we go
able
into
to,
the next session.
Yeah, we'll go into the next session. But no, I have heard this concern before, so we'll clarify that later.
All right. Going now to Blake calling us from – where are you, Blake? Waikiki? Are you in Waikiki? Okay, good.
My question is about adult take care. I'll take my answers offline. When is a senior appropriate for adult daycare, and what is the future of adult daycare in Hawaii?
The future of adult daycare, I hope that we are able to have more adult daycare centers. They are fantastic. A place for seniors to go for recreation and nutrition and to keep active, and as well as to be able to give respite to the families who are taking care of them. I do hope that we can expand this and find different models of integration of providing not just respite for older adults, mm-hmm. but lifespan, over the lifespan, and adult daycare being one solution.
Blake, thanks very much for the call. Going on now to Don calling us from Kaneohe.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Concerning Alzheimer's and dementia, I'm going through the phase with my mother right now, and I'm a legally blind individual to take it as a caretaker for caregiver, actually, for her. And I was just wondering how we can get the word out to these people, either through their physicians, you know, neurology and whatnot, to get the word out about how you can get services and whatnot. Would a physician be able to direct a person and say executive office of aging and all the other agencies and work their way from there to get services they need? And I appreciate your radio station for broadcasting this very important information for us.
Thank you, Don. Wes is going to answer you.
Yeah, you know, I'm really pleased that, you know, our office working with tremendous champions in the community who are just so passionate about finding solutions for the system to support people with dementia as well as their family caregivers. You know, we did put out recently a state plan to address this issue. We are currently implementing the state plan and addressing, you know, specifically exactly what you're talking about, and really working together to educate our physicians. You know, I'm getting them trained in terms of providing early diagnosis, having a new model of referrals in place so that we have a new system that enables coordinated care upon that diagnosis all the way until end of life. So we're doing a lot, and I'm really pleased with how collectively we have really been working really well, and we have just had so much synergy around this issue that you can expect a lot of good things to happen.
Any time frame in that?
Well, we just got a grant for $50,000 from the federal government. So for this education of the physicians, we can probably see happen with over the next calendar year. We do expect to be able to do some training and education for our aging and disability resource centers and making them as well as the whole community's dementia capable. And so we have a lot of good stuff going on.
Don, thanks so much for the call. We're going to go off now to Marilyn, also calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Marilyn. Welcome to
Aloha.
Town Square.
Aloha. I have several points that I'd like to make.
But Marilyn, you know what? We don't have time for you to make several, so I'm going to ask you to make the one that's most important to you.
All right. Well, I can hardly decide that. But this one I'm going to say, I've heard over and over again that we don't have enough information. And what perplexed me was, why do we go ahead and pass a bill and change a policy when we needed to gather a lot more information about the impact on these programs? Things are changing very rapidly now, both in Medicaid and state-funded programs across the country, and we really need to put all that together. And that's when you change policy, after you have put that together and looked closely at the impact.
All right, Marilyn, thanks very much for your call. She seems to be making the point that you two, Wes and Barbara, have been making. Howard?
My response is the bill makes sure we don't change policy, that what's been policy on Oahu as exactly reflected in the bill. And so
the bill is catching up to what's been happening, is
yeah.
your point.
And yeah, and there's nothing, there's never been anything in the contracts with City and County of Honolulu or the providers that stipulated that people on Medicaid could not be served with Kupuna Care funds. So this, our view is this is not a change in policy, that the legislation helps to make sure that there isn't a change in policy. I know that there's another view, but our view is that that's – because we've been doing it ever since Kupuna Care was funded by the state, 1999. 15 years we've been doing this.
Okay. Wes, jump in here.
Well, I think that's one of the challenges that we face when we're talking about changing a policy versus we talk about a policy versus a contract. And, I think that the way that the contract was written didn't reflect the policy of the way that we had interpreted. I mean, that's the truth. But the complexity of this is that we have four county offices on aging, and three of which were operating under one interpretation
way.
And another county operating a different way. So when we talk about changing state policy or keeping the state policy, that's been part of the problem with all of – that's the complexity.
Making it consistent,
yeah. And that is what we will be addressing, and that's why we're looking forward to getting the data so that we can move forward and make a change to the statutes, if that's what the representative is wanting to do. But at least then we will have the data that we can make an educated decision.
All right, we've got about a minute and a half before we're going to have to say goodbye to everybody. I want to go right around the table here and just get from you just a couple of points that you think we need to do right now, as this is going to – the bill takes effect if the governor signs it. It looks with every indication that he will. Very quickly, 15 seconds, where are we going in the next little while, Barbara?
We're going to need to have we need to strengthen our policy. We need to have good policy where it's going to serve those with the need, and we have to have good fiscal policy where we're going to tap into other people's money like the federal dollars, maximize our resources.
Howard.
Yeah, I think we clearly need to gather data on who are we talking about, how many people are really affected. And I think hopefully with the ADRC development, if it's done right, we get out the information to those who may need these services and they are able to access those services.
I want to go back to Barbara's demographics point. We know this is going to be a growing issue. So as we move forward, I think everyone around the table and everyone in the community, all the stakeholders, need to hold hands on this to find the best way forward.
And Westlam.
So as part of the executive branch, you know, we're going to be following the policies that are set by the legislature. And so our priority right now is to actually execute these policies statewide and work in the best interests of our kupuna and of the state. So thank you.
Westlam from the Executive Office on Aging, the director, Representative Della Albalotti, ARP's State Director Barbara Kim Stanton, and Howard Garville, President and CEO of Child and Family Service. Thank you all for being here, and thank you all for caring. There are a lot of people who depend on all of you, and we'll see how well we can all move together, hopefully, to be able to do a very big job that's going to get a lot bigger with a lot of people ever aging. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. I will see you right back here tomorrow morning for the conversation. In the meantime, have yourselves a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.